We know that the Aeneid was read in schools, therefore, but we also know that it was popular in a way that school texts perhaps usually are not. We know that because there are all sorts of surviving ancient graffiti that include quotations from the Aeneid. People wrote lines from the Aeneid on walls, which tells us that it was a popular work. It was something people read, remembered, and enjoyed from very shortly after Virgil's death. In late antiquity, as the Roman Empire moved towards its dissolution, the Aeneid remained one of the most commonly read and cited works. St. Augustine, for instance, in his great work, The Confessions, mentions weeping over the death of Dido as a child. Now, of course, he is somewhat distressed. The later Augustine, the Christian Augustine, is somewhat distressed that he wept over the death of Dido rather than over the fate of his own soul. But for our purposes here, this tells us that the Aeneid was still extremely popular. And Augustine says that he loved reading the Aeneid. He hated the Iliad and the Odyssey because Greek was so difficult. But he loved reading the Aeneid since it was written in his own native Latin. Augustine was not the only Christian author to love the Aeneid. Many Christian authors did, in fact, love Virgil and love all of Virgil's work, not just the Aeneid, but the Georgics and Eclogues as well. And Christian authors, interestingly enough, were able to justify their vast admiration for Virgil by allegorizing and reinterpreting his work. Now, the very fact that they wanted to do this is an indication of the hold that Virgil had over the Latin-speaking imagination, even as Romans moved from worshiping the pagan gods into Christianity. The very fact that Christians tried to rework Virgil, tried to allegorize Virgil, to make him in some sense a Christian author, indicates that they loved him enough that they wanted to be able to read him and not feel that they were in any way betraying their faith by doing so. Virgil was, in fact, often called an anima naturaliter Christiana, a soul naturally Christian, i.e., he was a Christian whether he knew it or not. He was a proto-Christian, despite the fact that he died in 19 BC, before Christ had even been born. One of Virgil's works in particular contributed to this Christianizing, this allegorizing of Virgil, and that was one of his eclogues, specifically the fourth eclogue, a poem in which Virgil predicts the birth of a wondrous child who will bring peace and prosperity to the world. Now, who knows what wondrous child Virgil was actually predicting? Probably Virgil was writing this poem in celebration of a marriage, most likely the marriage of Mark Antony to Octavian's sister Octavia, and Virgil was probably writing this poem in the hope that that couple would produce a child that would end the strife between Mark Antony and Octavian. But Christian writers, writing in late antiquity and the early Middle Ages, were able to see the fourth eclogue's prophecy of a wondrous child as a prophecy of the birth of Christ. And so Virgil could take his place beside the great Hebrew prophets as someone who had foretold the birth of Christ, even though perhaps he did not himself fully know what it was that he was foretelling. And this allowed Virgil a degree of acceptance. Not just the eclogues, but the Aeneid as well were allowed a degree of acceptance among Christians that other pagan authors, by and large, did not attain. And of course, the Aeneid fits very nicely into this, particularly the journey to the underworld, where Anchises is shown in a realm set aside for blessed souls, and where Tartarus is shown as a place for the wicked to be punished. It's not too difficult to get from that to a medieval view of hell and heaven, and to fit Virgil in again as an anima naturaliter Christiana. The reverence for Virgil in the Middle Ages was so great that his works were even sometimes used as a kind of divination tool in a practice called the sortes Virgilianae. That means the Virgilian drawing of lots, basically. How this worked was that someone would take a copy of Virgil, run their finger down the page with eyes closed, I presume. Whatever line their finger stopped on supposedly gave them an answer to whatever question they had to ask. So Virgil became a kind of fortune-telling book. You wanted to know what to do with your life, you wanted to ask a question and have it answered, just flip through your copy of the Aeneid and put your finger on a particular line and it will give you your answer. That has got to be one of the strangest byways of classical authors that I know of, Virgil ending up as a kind of divination tool.